Well, good morning, and thank you for joining us. It's a beautiful day outside, and soon our community will be buzzing with excitement as True False Weekend starts in just a few hours. And in just a few weeks, many of our students will be traveling on spring break and returning to their home away from home here in Columbia. We are here today to provide a community briefing about the coronavirus that is making headlines across the country and around the world. And while there are currently no confirmed cases in Missouri, and we are at a low risk, we are still preparing and planning. And here in Columbia and Boone County, we are doing our part to be prepared, but not panic. Columbia is well equipped with large numbers of hospitals and healthcare providers, robust first responder and emergency management operation agencies, and a strong public health department that has been coordinated jointly by the city and county since its inception over 50 years ago. And while the disease, this specific coronavirus COVID-19, is different, our response is the same. Following guidance from the Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, they are issuing health and hygiene instructions to the public while stepping up our coordination with other agencies and other levels of government, as well as our immediate neighbors. Everyone knows the old saying that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, and that old adage is rarely put into practice when it comes to public health, but it will pay dividends in this current challenge. We always strive for transparency and clear communication with our residents, businesses, visitors, and the media, and I'm glad you're here today to hear directly from those who have been monitoring and coordinating this situation since January. We are lucky to have a broad range of professionals and healthcare experts in our community to band together to make sure everyone is prepared and informed. I want to first introduce our Director of Columbia and Boone County Public Health and Human Services, Stephanie Browning. Director?
Thank you, Mayor Treese. Good morning. I want to thank everyone for coming this morning. I see a lot of people that I've worked with over the years that I rely on in times like this. So thanks so much. So as the mayor said, there are no confirmed cases of novel coronavirus or COVID-19 in Boone County or in the state of Missouri. As the number of cases continues to grow in the United States, we have been taking steps here locally to prepare. The health and well-being of everyone who lives, works, learns, and plays in Columbia and Boone County is our top priority. Many of our community partners, from healthcare, education, government, emergency management, public safety, nonprofits, and businesses, are sitting towards the front of the room. We work with them closely to ensure that they have the latest information from the CDC and the Missouri Department of Health and Senior Services. When we learned of the first cases of novel coronavirus in Wuhan, China, our agency started monitoring this disease. Since January, we've been in regular communication with the Missouri Department of Health and Senior Services, and we participate in weekly calls with the Centers for Disease Control. We consider them to be the subject matter experts around COVID-19, and we use their guidance when we're making decisions of how we would respond locally. While our goal is to prevent transmission locally, our obligation is to prepare for it. Public Health and Human Services is working with our local partners to ensure that we can have a timely, efficient, and appropriate response should the need arise. Our department has an emergency preparedness plan. We train on it and we exercise it regularly. The plan is called an all-hazards response plan, and it does include how to respond to outbreaks and pandemics. It was developed with many of the partners in this room. Our staff meets every month with healthcare providers, hospitals, and our first responders, and we work to make sure that our plans are all complementary to each other. We used our plan in 2009 when we responded to H1N1. We used it again in 2016 when we responded to an outbreak of mumps in our community. So I want to say an effective community response is an all community response. We all have a role in protecting ourselves and those around us. Some of the best things that each of us can do are the things you're hearing over and over again on the TV. Wash your hands often. Soap and water, at least 20 seconds. People always say, sing the happy birthday song. Just wash, wash, wash. If soap and water aren't available, use a hand sanitizer. Make sure it's at least 60% alcohol or more. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, mouth with your unwashed hands, which is hard to do when the pollen counts are up, right? Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Cover your cough or your sneeze with a tissue, and if you don't have a tissue, cough into your elbow. Don't forget to clean the surfaces that you touch regularly and disinfect them. Your phone, your mouse top, you know, your anything like that. And finally, when you're sick, stay at home. Last week, we had over 500 cases of influenza reported to our department here in Boone County. The flu continues to pose a big risk to the health of those of us in the community. And taking these steps will prevent you from getting the flu, and they'll prevent coronavirus should it ever arrive here. Last thing I want to say is we've seen a lot of images on the news with bare shelves and people stockpiling, and I think for some that feels very alarming. So I want to give you something to think about. Consider every year that we encourage you to stock up on your food, medications, etc., in the event of a weather emergency, that we're coming into tornado season. This is what we should be doing anyway. Our recommendation as it relates to preparing for COVID-19 is very similar. If you're ill or you've been exposed, we don't want you to go to the grocery store to have to get your groceries. We want you to be able to stay home and take care of yourself. So I encourage you to just think about tornadoes and what do you need in your house, and think about if you needed to, you know, stay home because you'd been exposed, or think about those things that you might need. At this time, can't really predict what will happen with COVID-19, and so that's why I'm encouraging you to plan ahead as much as you can. And we will continue doing our part in being prepared to respond should the time come. So at this time, I would like to turn this over to Dr. Stephen Witt, who's the Chief Medical Officer at MU Healthcare.
Morning. Thank you very much for having me today. Rather than repeat all of the excellent advice given by Ms. Browning, I would intend to focus on our acute care facilities. Are we ready in case we do have an outbreak? We are monitoring hourly the state, national, worldwide responses to COVID-19. SARS-CoV-2 is the virus, COVID-19 is the disease, just to be clear. We believe the risk in our community is very low, but it doesn't mean we should not be prepared, because eventually we may see it. MU Healthcare has procedures and protocols in place to treat patients with COVID-19, very similar to the way we currently treat influenza patients. We maintain a safe environment for our patients, our community, their families, and also our care providers. If you or an individual has a respiratory illness consistent with COVID-19, we ask that you stay home, and if you get sick, that you call your physician and get advice. That physician could be in clinic, could be in an urgent care center, could be your family physician, could be one of our physicians, could be an emergency room physician. We're exploring the use of virtual visits at the university. Us and many other parts of the country think that this is an excellent solution to both normal influenza season as well as instances like COVID-19, patients can get quickly evaluated, get their questions answered, and we can get the sick patients that need to be in a hospital to a hospital, and we can keep the patients who don't need to be in a hospital safe and in their community and with their family. If a decision is made to test a person, we test very similarly to the way we test for many other diseases. Some diseases we do at our local lab, some go to our state lab here in Missouri, some go to places like the CDC. We will not be testing everyone. We test people with indications for tests with those tests. If you don't have indications for those tests, we don't. This both protects the supply of the testing materials, but also reduces the likelihood that the test will be not representative of true disease. People are concerned with shortages like personal protective equipment. At this time at MU Healthcare, we do not have any shortages. We do not predict any shortages. And with the absence of hoarding, we think we are well prepared. We meet with our supply chain folks just as hospitals are doing all around the nation, and we are confident that we will have the personal protective equipment for both our patients and our staff that we will need to cover this time. Our preparedness plan for dealing with COVID-19 includes protecting our staff, the measures that you use to protect that we put in place for H1N1, that we update every single year, that we updated when Ebola became a real possibility. And now with COVID-19, we use the exact same protections that we would use for all of those patients. We are confident for preparedness strategies. We've been taking care of our region's sickest and most injured patients for many decades, and we will and we are prepared to take care of this any patients that get sick with this disease. I think we're happy to take questions at the end. I would love to introduce one of my many bosses, Chancellor Cartwright.
Thank you, Dr. Witt. And thank you, Mayor, for arranging this today for us to actually talk a little bit about what we're doing. It is terrific to see so many of our partners here today, people that we work with all the time. And this actually goes to show how much we come together as a community and that we're prepared to work collectively. You've heard from Dr. Witt, you've heard from Ms. Browning about the best practices moving forward. I won't spend any time on that. They are the experts, and we're fortunate enough in this community to have amazing experts that can actually help us with when anything like this comes up. We pride ourselves on our relationship with the community. Our university always works with the community, and we look forward to whenever we have a challenging situation that we know we can count on each other. Our civic leaders, first responders, we've been building those relationships for a long time. When I first got here, Gary Ward, our Vice Chancellor for Operations, one of the first things that he briefed me on was our preparedness plan and how we as an institution respond under crisis, and showing me how we bring together people from around the entire community for us to actually work together in tabletop exercises where we look at different scenarios. And in fact, yesterday we had one of those, and I want to thank all the people from the community who actually participated in that to help us to continue to be prepared. And that is just part of what we do. Our planning is always going on. We're always thinking about what may happen. Scenario planning is important. And we want to make sure that everything that we're doing in our messaging and in our planning aligns, of course, with CDC guidelines. We're always looking at how do we make sure that anything we do is in the best interest of our students, our faculty, our staff, and, of course, the community. And you heard again from our experts at MU Healthcare, they are part of this. They are ready in case anything does happen. And that the drills just make sure that it goes beyond just MU Healthcare, but in fact includes our entire community. I want to thank all of them for being part of that. We have to think as a university about our academic mission and also the fact that we are living in a community. With that in mind, we've asked our provost, Latha Ramchan, to work very closely with Gary Ward to ensure that we are looking at the academic issues and we're also looking at the community issues that come about from having a large number of students living within a community and living with all of you. And we will be prepared and we continue to plan so that we have the best plans possible. As I said, we're going to face this together, and there will always be some times when we have to think about challenges like this. But the great thing about this community to me is that we follow our true values. We follow our values of caring about each other, about respecting each other, and we want to continue to do that as we move forward, and that we show that care for each other, and we show that respect for each other. So I want to thank all of you for being here, and again, I'd like to thank the mayor for making this possible. Thank you, Mayor.
Well, let me thank Director Browning and Chancellor Cartwright and Dr. Witt for sharing their insight and their messages today. I also want to thank many of our community partners that are here today, from our emergency management, first responders, and healthcare providers represented here. We're also fortunate to have a physician on the Columbia City Council, and I've asked Dr. Betsy Peters to help oversee and monitor our all-community response and help me sift through information and misinformation as it arises. Later this afternoon, I have a phone call with Governor Parson about the state's response and how Columbia fits into those efforts. You know, as a healthcare community, Columbia is on the leading edge of this potential threat. But being on the leading edge also means that you are a leader in that response. And as you have heard, we have a plan. You have heard we've practiced parts of that plan as recently as late yesterday afternoon with the university. And you heard that we have implemented our plan successfully when other virus issues have arisen in the past. I encourage you not to be fearful, but do remain vigilant and follow the simple advice from healthcare professionals as we slow and prevent the spread of this virus. To be prepared, but not panic. I strongly encourage our residents in our educational institutions, our businesses, to take a few minutes to go over their contingency plans, just as you would with your family. We should all have one in an event of a fire or a natural disaster or severe weather, or even for when we are ill and may have to stay home for a few days. We've updated our website at como.gov to reflect the latest guidance from the CDC, and we'll continue to provide periodic updates on both social and local media. Director Browning mentioned some of the ways to protect yourself and your family. And when you protect yourself and your family, you also protect our community. I want to remind everyone of the importance of washing your hands and staying home when you're sick. And not only can you keep yourself healthy, but you can keep your family and our community healthy. Finally, I want to reiterate Chancellor Cartwright's commitment and insight on values. Here in Columbia, we value equity. We value diversity. Our community's strength is in our diversity. The City of Columbia has joined with the University and the Chamber of Commerce and scores of businesses to adopt our principles of community that states we value every person. And every person should be treated with respect and dignity. And as we go about our daily lives and as we welcome visitors into our community this weekend for the internationally recognized True False Film Festival, please aspire to our principles of community. We have been in close contact with True False organizers for the last several weeks, and they have added additional hand sanitizing stations and informational signs throughout the festival footprint. And we are well prepared in the event of any spread. I want to thank you again for attending today. We have 10 minutes for questions from the audience and the media. We want to capture your questions because this is also being live streamed and available later for review for those that couldn't be with us today. So please speak into any wireless microphones that are available. We'll also have one-on-one interviews in the adjacent room with any of the healthcare professionals and first responders that are here as well. So, are there any questions? Yes, sir.
I'm curious about what sort of institutional lessons the university learned from the H1N1 outbreak 10 years ago, 11 years ago, and how it's planning on applying those in case of an outbreak here.
So I wasn't here during that time, but as I mentioned, when I got here, one of the first things that the Vice Chancellor Ward talked to me about was our preparedness plan. And I'm assuming that that came out of some of the lessons learned from H1N1. And we continue to have conversations about what happened then, and that is part of what we think about moving forward. So I think the university has adopted a lot of the lessons learned from that in our current plan, and as we move forward in this, we look at how can we improve the existing plan. I don't know if Dr. Witt was here during that time. Would you like to make a couple comments? I mean, you were here, so...
So I was part of the planning team. We worked with our community emergency preparedness professionals, and many of the things we learned were to think ahead a few notches, right? When you get sick with a respiratory disease and you already have diabetes or you already have some other illness, it's that population that primarily gets injured and suffers. And so things like extra ventilators for people who have respiratory difficulty, extra supplies, planning for what if we run out of room in our where we usually take care of patients, where would we put extra patients? Those kinds of plans are the same plans we've had since H1N1, and we update them literally every single year as part of our review process. Those lessons were very helpful.
I have a question. Do our hospitals have the capability to test for coronavirus? And are patients that have flu-like symptoms that are not testing positive for influenza, can they be tested for coronavirus? Because I think one difference is that this is a pretty... dangerous virus, especially for the elderly and chronically ill in our community. And I think we want to try to prevent prevent really early on with the first person, not when it is more of an emergency. It spreads very quickly. So my question is, do we have the capability? And I do think we have to be a bit more aggressive in preventing it from coming and being aware, especially with true false coming.
Thank you. We do have the ability to test for the illness. It's currently being run in Jefferson City, like many other labs that our providers in our communities order. There are rules about ordering tests. So for instance, I hate to go on a tangent, but it's illustrative. If people fear they have a disease, let's say cancer, and they have zero risk factors, zero symptoms, zero family history, and we think that the percent that they have that disease is very low, the right thing to do is not order tests to look for those, because none of our tests in the history of the world yet are 100%. And when we order tests on people who are very unlikely to have the disease, we end up getting false positives that lead us down roads to do harmful things to people. So what we do is we look for people with risk factors, and if they have those risk factors, we absolutely test. You bet. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm talking about people that you are... that do show influenza-like illness. And in this situation, I think you have to be a bit more vigilant. I'm not talking about testing, you know, people that are not don't show those kind of symptoms. And the CDC's guidelines were pretty narrow. So following those guidelines, it's been expanded now to anybody that you feel like is at risk. Basically anybody that has influenza-like symptoms. So I think, you know, especially with people traveling in from all over, it may be prudent to start maybe doing that.
Currently, so far, the screening criteria have been pretty accurate, but you are correct. As it has develops community spread, that screening criteria will become not very helpful. We believe it's going to be added to our routine panels. Like we have, when you hear coronavirus, we have coronaviruses come up positive all the time. It's a normal type of virus that's in our communities. It's just this novel coronavirus. We think it will be added, but it's not yet. You've hit on an important thing. What is going to be our screening criteria in the future? And probably it's going to be a routine test that we will run somewhere in the future. Just don't know that yet.
I'm you.
Hi. So my question is, I got kind of two parts. One, should we see this outbreak continue to grow? Are there plans in place to have remote classes for students, or in the event you can't go to campus, what's the main plan?
Yeah, you said you had two parts. That's one part?
Yeah, and then the second part is we got spring break coming up.
Yep.
And people could be going all over the world, maybe. What is the university doing to keep track of who's going where, and what plans need to be in place for that?
Right. On the first one, in terms of the ability to offer classes remotely, yes, we are actually looking at that, and we're making sure that if things do, if there was to be a breakout in this area and we needed to do that, we want to ensure we can do as much of that as we can, and that all of our faculty are prepared to be able to do as much of that as possible. So that is one thing that we're doing. The second one, again, was the...
With spring break coming up, just everybody going everywhere.
So, you know, one of the things that we've done is we've made it clear that we don't want people traveling to level three countries. What we would encourage, because we can certainly say that we put a restriction on university-sponsored travel, we would encourage anybody who has, you know, their own travel to those countries to not go if at all possible, because that is something that we would discourage. And we have sent that message pretty clearly to try to tell people not to put themselves in that position, because it actually will create other challenges for them and for the community.
And for the students coming back from Italy, what are the plans in place for them?
Yeah, so the current guidelines, and I'll actually probably ask Ms. Browning to talk about it in detail, but we will always follow CDC guidelines, and right now that is self-isolation. So I'll let Ms. Browning talk about that for you.
We've been communicating with the university, and what we will be doing is, as we know where the students are going to finally, what their final destination will be, because it may not be in Columbia, because remember, they're supposed to be studying for a semester in another country. So they are not necessarily coming back to classes here. So we will get the information of where they're going. If they're not going to be in Columbia or Boone County, we will communicate with our state health department and provide that information to them. They will then let the other affected counties know. And our goal is going to be like self-isolation, where we will make contact with them twice a day. We'll ask them to check for a temperature. We'll ask them to, you know, do they have any symptoms, et cetera, and we will keep in touch with them that way.
Mark Slavitt with KRCG Channel 13. This question is for anyone who wants to respond to it. My question is, what collaboration is taking place between MU Healthcare and Boone Hospital Center as we plan and prepare for the coronavirus?
Yeah, I think like any other natural disaster event, severe weather planning process, that type of collaboration occurs all the time. And I can tell you probably had weekly conference calls with CDC and those hospital providers for both Boone and MU Healthcare. And I'll let Boone follow up on that. We also have MU Healthcare folks here as well that can elaborate on that. But I think coordinating census counts and resources and all that is a natural part of all community response. Any other questions?
Hello. My question is, would Colombia consider issuing a state of emergency like San Antonio did if coronavirus cases are confirmed?
It's premature to even discuss that at this point. I mean, I think, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, and there are all of these efforts that we can take as a community to prevent us getting to that point.
And then one last question. You mentioned that MU has tested positive for coronavirus just in little cases. They have not.
No.
Has anyone been contacted with anyone confirmed in those cases?
No.
There are no cases of COVID-19 disease or SARS-CoV-2, which is the virus we're talking about. That virus is a member of a larger coronavirus family that are spread worldwide, common cold flu-like viruses.
So thank you for being here today. For media that wants to do one-on-one interviews, if you would like to move your equipment into conference rooms 1A and 1B that are just across the council chambers here, we will have many of the folks that either spoke today or some of the other folks that are here today from the planning and response areas available to answer any questions. But thank you very much for being here today.